Hello and welcome to Let's Pod This, friends. My name is Andy Moore. Welcome back. I'm joined by my great co-host, Dr. Emily Stacey. Hello.
Hi, man. How are you?
I'm well. Good to see you.
Yeah. You as well.
It's been a few minutes
since
we were in studio together.
Indeed.
I honestly cannot. I mean, it's been like a month, but it feels...
It's not been that long, but it's been, yeah, but it, for us, it feels...
Feels like a long time.
And for politics, right, because everything moves literally second to second, so yes.
I think...
Lots of things have transpired.
Maybe that's the thing, is that like so much has happened in the last few weeks.
Days. Yeah.
Days.
All of it.
Today.
Yeah.
How are you, Emily?
I think I'm okay, man. We're getting to the end of the semester. You're hearing the sort of sinus drainage fatigue, you know, all of the things. But first day of graduation is next Friday. I've got like, my whole cohort of children are graduating, which, you know, Shan and Chris and like all of my, like, just the best cohort I've had so far. And so I'm a little bit verklempt about that. Yeah. So we're a little emo, but we're okay. How about you?
I'm good. You and I have both been traveling for work recently. I was in Washington, D.C. last week for the America Votes State Summit.
Yeah.
You were in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, I was in Philly the week before that. Yeah. I ended up at the Organization of American Historians conference, which, you know, for a political scientist was not quite my gig, but also very much like the publishers and the books and, right, all of that. It overlaps. History is political science's cousin. We don't like to claim these things, but...
Right. I love a conference.
I do too. I'm a nerd, right?
No, but like any conference.
My favorite thing.
I love, because conferences are people who are really into a very specific topic. And it's fascinating to see the like inner conversations and dialogue. Not like it's secret, but like.
No.
Just like, I mean, I've been to lots of like counseling conferences and HIV conferences when I worked in those communities. And now... in this like advocacy government stuff. But sometimes you get, in fact, this last week, I was in DC at the big, the convention center. There was also this like data conference there because it's a huge facility and everyone's name badges were like similar. So we were kind of like sussing out who,
who was it.
It was just like, well, who are these people? And it's like exactly, this is a broad stereotype, but like, the people who attend a like data warehouse conference are exactly, they look just like who I expected them.
Right.
Lots of polos and New Balance and just,
That's great.
Yeah, but I love and like in DC, there's always conferences of all kinds
overlapping,
of
overlapping, Every hotel.
It's always wild.
It's a good time.
Sometimes when you see name tags on the street, you're like, ooh, what are you here for? Yeah.
Can I get an in? Do I need to know you?
Yeah, because every industry, like I would go to a realtors conference.
Right?
Or like even, you know, pyramid scheme, like Shockley Vitamins or one of those kinds of, I would go and be like, this is
Give me the free pancakes, but also I'm not buying your timeshare.
Yes, right. Yes,
I like that. I like that about you. I feel the same way. We just like to talk to people, I think.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Everyone's got a story. Yeah.
Right?
100%. 100%. Well, anyways, good to see you. Welcome back to Oklahoma.
It's, same.
Mad Dash. So I think today's episode, we're going to try to cover... a lot of ground, but probably not super deep. We're going to talk about a Supreme Court ruling that came out today. We're going to talk about the legislative session.
Indeed.
And then we'll talk about Civics Con as a bit of a recap.
Indeed.
And then we'll go from there. So let's start. Let's go chronologically.
Okay.
So let's do Civics Con.
Okay.
Then Calais, since that's today. And then legislative session, because that's kind of ongoing.
Ongoing. Yeah.
Does fair enough. Sound
yeah,
good?
Totally.
Okay, great. Well, listeners, hopefully you listened to last week's episode, which was, I listened to it as well, which was Joe Kennedy's speech and Q&A from...
He was great.
He was so great. And, you know, when you are organizing an event or hosting, like, I was in the room for his speech, but I was not listening the whole time.
Sure, yeah.
Because I was, like, preparing for the next one
exactly,
and taking
yeah.
pictures. And so I listened to it this week in the car. And I had heard parts of it, but it was really interesting to listen to it. I'm looking forward as I'm starting to edit all the videos from sessions, going back and listening to it. But so aside from just that session, Emily, how did you feel about CivicsCon? What stood out to you? What were the highlights?
Man.
Lowlights, if you want.
I don't know. It's a thing that you and I do together, so there are never any lowlights. It was a great conference this year. They've all been I think progressively better. This was, I think we decided our fourth annual, so next year will be our fifth annual.
Yeah.
Did we decide that?
I think so. Are we off? Well, I did one.
You did one without me, obviously. Two without you.
Yeah. But those were practice ones. We'll start these. The first one was in 2020. And okay. It was all virtual because it.
Oh, that, yeah, of course.
When we started planning it, it was before COVID, right. And then voila. Mm-hmm. And then we skipped 21, and then we did one at OU in 2022 that was really focused on geocivics.
Okay.
And Generation Citizen kind of led the charge on that one because it was the connection they had.
Yeah.
But really started in 2023.
Okay.
So we've done.
So this is our third then?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then my math is way.
No, that's
good. I'm a political scientist. Qualitative, not quantitative.
I don't think the attendees care which year it is.
It's okay. But once we get to the fifth annual, we need to do something big. So we're just keeping that in mind.
Mental note.
Yes, mental note.
We should do something big every year.
I mean, we kind of do. I mean, it's not like, you know, last year we had, you know, Attorney General Keith Ellison. And this year we had, you know, a Kennedy and Dr. Alan Weissman. So I think we are... We're keeping the bang for the buck, I think, each year.
Yeah.
I was really pleased with the way things turned out this year. I think all of the panels were incredibly rich. I heard a lot of great feedback, specifically about the criminal justice reform, the Chris Steele, Demetrius Minor panel, and victim advocacy. That panel was very well received. A lot of my students ended up attending that one and had a lot of insight and conversation afterwards. Another one that really stood out to me was actually a last minute addition by you and our good friend whose name is escaping me at the moment.
Sarah Blaney.
Thank you, Sarah. Oh my God, my whole life is insanity. But yeah, Sarah put together the Women in Leadership panel, which turned out to be really incredible. I pulled Sandra Harrison, obviously, my mentor. And the godmother of my daughter onto the panel, but Erica Lucas from Vest Her, a fabulous connection. And there was a really moving moment, which I hope you will watch the video, audience, and whenever you're editing, you'll note that Erica Lucas, who again runs Vest Her and Stitch Crew in Oklahoma City, a female leadership development sort of mentorship program, she was asked a question by one of my students about, you know, as a socioeconomically disadvantaged woman, how to go about, you know, just even getting started, you know, putting a foot in a door whenever you have felt marginalized your entire life. And Erica was so moved that she sponsored her and gave her
an annual
membership. And this is, I mean, you know, coming from, you know, Rose State College, you know, that's a big deal for, you know, anyone. I mean, it would be a big deal for me. But it was a really big deal for Sierra, the student. And I know that she's already taken it. They've already had coffee.
Yeah.
So that was a really awesome connection and just a really moving, it's giving me chills just, you know, regurgitating right now. I really like that CivicsCon is not just, we don't just talk about it. We're about it, right? And the panelists that we bring on are not just there to be talking heads. They're walking the walk. They're doing, you know, the hard work within the community, within the government, whatever, you know, sector they may be in. And so that was just a really cool reminder of, oh man, this is why we do this. Like this is bigger than, you know, just us being, you know, nerds in a room. Like this can actually change people's lives.
Yeah.
So I was very pleased with CivicsCon this year.
That's such a good perspective, Emily. I think I'm going to repeat what you said there, that it's not just, I forgot how you said it. You said it's not just something we talk about. It's something we do.
We're about it.
Yeah. I think that's a great ethos for this event. And I obviously like the only, not low light, but I think I've heard so much overwhelmingly positive feedback.
Yeah.
The only critique that everyone has had, and I think us as well, is that like, why aren't there more people here?
Yeah,
I was
because
we put all of our effort into programming and not enough into promotion, which we are working on.
We'll get better.
Yeah, for next year.
We promise.
No, but I had coffee with one of the speakers this week, and she said it was her first time, and she was like, oh my gosh, like I want everyone I know to come to this. It was really good. So
good.
It's good. I had similar feedback. I think one of the highlights for me, and again, I haven't even seen all the episodes or all the sessions, but one of the sessions I moderated, I guess that's why I'm biased, but was about housing policy.
Yeah.
And I put this together because I know it's an issue that extends from the local to the national level. And it's an issue that's salient right now.
Yeah.
So the panelists were State Senator Julia Kurt, Oklahoma City Councilman James Cooper, Amy Coldren from the Mental Health Association, and then one of my neighbors, Christina, who has been working like at the hyper-local, like on her street, going to city planning commission meetings and city council meetings. It was someone who had no awareness of housing policy before.
It touched her.
Right, until a developer started building a monstrosity next to her. Yeah. And she's like, hang on, what is this? Yeah, this is
not in my backyard, right?
And and so she's like learned a whole bunch. Yeah. And one of the things I liked about that conversation and that I've heard from people who were in the room was that even though, you know, like Councilman Cooper and Julia Kurt are both Democrats.
Yeah.
I don't know if everyone else is, but like just because their party affiliation is the same doesn't mean that they align on everything.
No, absolutely not.
And there was some real, you know, someone like asked a question of like, what can we do about X problem? And Senator Kurt was like, well, the state could step in and like preempt the cities and like basically take over. If cities are going to be slow to move, the state should do it. And you could see James kind of be like, yes, although I also recognize that often the state steps in and preempts cities in ways that are harmful.
Sure.
And so you could see this like uncomfortable rub. And then to get a perspective of the Mental Health Association, which is one of the largest housing providers for unhoused individuals, people with mental health issues, to talk about like, it's not just about housing policy in terms of like planning and zoning or how do we incentivize developers, but it's also like, how do we ensure that people on the otherwise fringes of society still have housing? It was really, I think everyone walked away with like a little bit of, there was no clear solution, but lots of perspectives being like, oh, like good public policy is complex. It I was like, okay, even if we don't come to a solution,
We're
have a shared recognition. So I thought that was really good.
Love that.
Yeah.
That makes me happy.
Well, great. Well,
I loved it. It was, and I like that we had, again, I'm going to be very emo, emo to lose my kids, but it was great to have such a great cohort. You had really great interns, one of whom I'm partial to, who happens to be my student at Oklahoma City University. But then my students from Rose State, just the, how involved like the young people were this year.
Yeah.
And even beyond students, there were quite a few young people who just kind of come to hang out and were a part of different advocacy groups, which was great as well. So I was really pleased.
Yeah. Great. Well, let's find time to start planning for next year.
Yes, we will.
Let's get through this semester.
Amen. Yes.
I've already got a document started. We got some ideas and some potential partnerships. Indeed. I think could be exciting.
Agree.
Okay, well, that's subject one. Next topic is the U.S. Supreme Court. Let's go from very local housing policy to the highest court in the land. And I know that our listeners are familiar with the issue of gerrymandering.
Yep.
Because I've probably talked about it probably more than any other topic in the last, you know,
nine years.
So listeners may remember, well, let's just do the Calais ruling first, and then we'll give some background.
Sure.
So, I forget the actual full case name if you have it.
Louisiana v. Calais.
Okay, there you go. Louisiana v. Calais. So this was a case about essentially racial gerrymandering.
Effectively,
for partisan purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And the question before the court, as I understand it, is can you gerrymander on racial lines if the outcome is partisan? Or can you tell me?
No, you're fine. So, hi, listeners. I teach constitutional law at Oklahoma City University, so I'm going to get real wonky for a minute. So this was obviously voting rights, redistricting case. So the main question, and I think that this is where I get the worried about the opinion and the way that it was put down. So the legal question verbatim is, can Louisiana intentionally draw a second majority black district to comply with the Voting Rights Act without violating the Constitution's ban on racial gerrymandering? So they had initially drawn one, majority. We in political science refer to them as majority minority districts, but in Louisiana, obviously, due to the population, it's going to be African American. Mm-hmm. So that's why they're referring to it.
Group,
yes, exactly. Exactly. So that's why we're referring to it that way. And so there was a group of voters who initially challenged that first map, and federal district court there said yes, that they needed to redraw because initially they had just one majority black district, and the federal court said that they needed two based on the population, which in Louisiana, roughly a third of the state's population is African American. And so the first federal court said the first map was not diverse enough or representative enough. That's the right word. And so this comes eventually to the Supreme Court, right? After they draw that second map with the second majority black district into it, and that's where Philip Calais comes in, and a group of non-black voters is the way that they're referred to in the case, right? Sure. So they bring the suit to the Supreme Court under the Equal Protection Act, right? Or Equal Protection Clause, I should say. And so here's the wonky part, and I'll let you get in here because I'm doing the professor thing.
That's good.
Here's my problem. You have tests that have been created when the government can legally discriminate, right? So strict scrutiny is what is being used here by Alito, right?
Which is a higher threshold.
It is the highest threshold, right? So strict scrutiny, strict, heightened, and ordinary, right? So strict scrutiny is suspect-based classification. So that's going to be race, ethnic origin, and religion. And so anytime a law, an act, a map, whatever it is treating people differently based on those suspect-based classifications, the court is always going to see that as discriminatory, right? Unless there's a compelling public interest, right? Mm-hmm. Public interest. And so it's a very interesting moment, I think, again, going forward. So again, heightened is sex-based, ordinary is age-based, and the government has to show that there's a compelling public interest to keep these folks apart or to discriminate against these folks. And so my concern, and, you know, please, you know, give the breakdown of the opinion today, but I'm concerned going forward. So what happened today, Andy?
Oh, well,
you tell me.
I mean, I think in simple terms, they killed the Voting Rights Act. I mean, this was the last vestige of the Voting Rights Act of 1960, right? 65?
Yeah.
Okay, that's right. There were several.
But the 65,
That was the big one, the last one.
Yeah.
So they previously, under the Ruscio decision a few years ago, had basically said, the U.S. Supreme Court said, political gerrymandering is wrong and illegal, but we have no jurisdiction over it.
Right.
So it's up to the states, which means that if you wanted to file a lawsuit alleging political gerrymandering, that is drawing political districts to favor one party or another, that it would be a state issue.
Right.
And the problem is, like, in order to get a state to side with you, like, in almost every state where this would happen, it would mean that the people who drew the maps were of a different party.
Exactly.
Of the state Supreme Court. So, like, in Oklahoma, we could, like, I, as an independent voter or someone who works on maps could say, hey, these maps are gerrymandered for political reasons, but the state Supreme Court is probably not going to agree with me. They're going to say, well, it's fine. Or maybe it's not. Because there are tests, but there's not one agreed upon test of, like, this district is gerrymandered.
Well, so 1986, the Supreme Court comes out and says effectively that gerrymandering is only unconstitutional, quote unquote, when the minority party's influence is eliminated statewide.
Oh, not just diminished.
No, eliminated, right? And so how do you prove that, number one? And so since 1986, we've seen these very creative ways, right, of drawing the map in, you know, these slivers or whatever that just barely graze that line, right, of eliminate. Because, again, think of the state of Oklahoma in the last two times that we've gerrymandered. How do you prove that the Democratic Party's influence has been diminished or eliminated statewide?
Right.
Even diminished, right? What is the threshold? What is the, you know, the burden of proof?
Because the Democratic Party still
exists. You still see candidates. Seats, you still, right.
Right. Effectively, they're pretty neutered because it's a supermajority in the Republican side.
Right.
But it's not
But right?
Legally, the court. Like,
semantically.
Right.
Right?
And in our state, for a state Supreme Court that has, I think, 5 members appointed by the current governor.
Exactly.
Like, we can kind of guess where the decision would come down.
Right. Here's my concern. So, and again, I'm a nerd and I teach con law, so I printed out the first 5 pages of the syllabus, the opinion, right? So here's what the court held. Because the Voting Rights Act did not require Louisiana to create an additional majority-minority district, no compelling public interest justified the state's use of race in creating Senate Bill 8, and the map is an unconstitutional racial gerrymander. Further, they go on to note that, again, those 2 compelling interests, right? The compelling interest, number one, this one is kind of moot, avoiding imminent and serious risks to human safety in prisons. Okay, cool. But the second one is the where, again, I get really concerned about future decisions, especially in the South, where a lot of these gerrymandered maps are coming from, right? These tend to be, you know, relics of the past of slavery.
Sure.
This is where a lot of your, color population, your populations of color, are housed. So the second part, or the second compelling interest is, quote, remediating specific identified instances of past discrimination that violated the Constitution or statute.
That's tough to do.
Yeah, that's right. And so because it didn't reach that, which again, based on what I just said about the slavery being, you know, predominantly housed in the South, and those populations largely still stay, I mean, those demographics still being largely African-American. We're already seeing on social media, you've been busy today doing other podcasts, but you'll start to see when you get on social media, like the Virginia map, for example.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it goes entirely red after this decision, should they decide, that redistricting is, or this new map is redistricted, or I'm sorry, gerrymander.
Right, right. It opens the door for litigation on existing maps.
Yeah.
And I think throws a lot of uncertainty into the process for redistricting in 2031.
Absolutely.
Which is the next cycle. I do, as someone who personally loathes gerrymandering and thinks it's referred to as the original sin in politics, right? Like, thanks a lot, Massachusetts.
Exactly, right.
That because the law, the Voting Rights Act, has been slowly chipped away at since 1965, right?
Sure.
And decision after decision, case after case, little by little. And I think a lot of folks were correctly worried that this Calais decision would be the final nail in the coffin. Yep. Now, the responses I've seen online, the few, have been like, including from, there's a guy named Sam Wong, who is running for Congress in New Jersey.
Okay.
I know him because he runs or ran the Princeton Gerrymandering Project.
So,
this is his area of focus.
Yeah, yeah.
So, of course, and I have worked with him on the national side for other stuff. I don't even know what party he's running as in New Jersey. I really have no idea. I subscribed to a Substack or whatever. So I got the email today where he was like, here's the ruling and here's why I'm pissed about it. And I was like, okay. He calls upon Congress to act. That's what I've seen people say. Like, okay, well, the courts have gutted the Voting Rights Act. So now it's up to Congress to pass a new Voting Rights Act that is stronger. And I don't think anybody believes that's going to happen.
Not this Congress, no.
Right.
Not this one.
They also can't hardly pass anything.
We can't get a budget done. You want a massive constitutional reinforcement of,
decades
enfranchisement for folks who, let me not be controversial, but again, it's concerning.
But it is worth noting that even right now, as we sit here, parts of the government are still
shut down
because they haven't. This is the longest, and no one's talking about it.
Not at all.
Why? Because we got a war and an assassination attempt and a few other things that have happened.
Airplane, right? Because the lines are not bad because they got paid. Give it another week when those people call off their jobs again, and we'll be hearing about it.
That's right. Right.
That executive order only lasts for so long.
Right. I saw a headline with Mark Wayne Mullen's picture of hey, funding's about to run out for Homeland Security and stuff. So.
Good luck, bro. This is your first test. He's about to get a trial by fire in the next I mean, what, tomorrow's the 30th?
Yeah. 24 hours. It is wild. And I mean, I think the idea is correct that Congress should.
Yes.
But whether they're going to is another thing.
Unfortunately, I mean, unfortunately right now, and I don't understand the impetus to stop more voters from voting, right? Why would you not, as any party, right? Why would you not want the most, you know, numerous amount of your population who is educated, who is qualified, right, who are legal, whatever it is, right? They've got all the boxes checked, they have their IDs, whatever it is. Why would you not want a plurality of humanity to come out and vote? Why are we making it? Right. And this is, it's antithetical. And like Oklahoma, for example, I'm sorry, I'm going to get on the soapbox.
Please.
Right. I'm starting to fidget. I'm getting on a soapbox. Right. We were, I mean, you know, our constitution, it was hella populist, hella socialist. We were incredibly progressive and about the people, right? Enfranchising the people at every turn. And I feel like, absentee balloting, we were one of the first states. I mean, we were...
Initiate petition.
Right. Yeah. We are at the forefront of all of these things, even when we were Republican-led, right? So this was not something that, you know, just magically came out of the liberal sky. This was something that conservatives were advocating and pushing for in this state. And now it seems that same group of humanity is like, wait a minute. Right. Too many people have agency,
right?
Too many people have access. So we need to make sure that, you know, voting is only happening on Tuesday. This early voting stuff, we need to get right because it's allowing too many people to be enfranchised and to, you know, exercise. I don't know.
You are preaching to the choir. I love this. Emily, I've been saying this stuff for longer than you and I have been friends, but that Oklahoma needs its own Voting Rights Act. And I think states probably need to look at this.
Yeah, I agree.
If the highest court in the country is going to do this, the way to absolve that is to fix it at the state level that doesn't require the federal government. Yep. As long as it doesn't interfere with the U.S. Constitution,
which it shouldn't.
Right. Because it's up to states to run elections.
Exactly. Well, at least for now.
Right. I mean, we may run into some issues with congressional redistricting, but not state level. And even then, like, as long as you put provisions in place to draw fair maps, those maps won't violate decisions like Clay or Rusho. There's two groups of people, I'm convinced. You're in one camp or the other. Either you want every eligible voter to vote, or you don't.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I want every eligible. If every eligible voter voted and, you know, my preferred candidate or my side of an issue lost, okay.
Great.
It was a fair fight.
Exactly.
But right now we're not fighting fair.
At all.
We're trying to, like, hamstring both sides and then cobble together just enough votes to get across the finish line.
Right, and then claim a mandate.
That word gets thrown around a lot in this state.
It sure does.
I mean, they're like, I got 52% of the vote. It's a mandate from the voters. I'm like, I don't think that...
I mean, kind of it is in this state, unfortunately.
Right.
But, I mean, based on statistics, but also, that is not what the word mandate means. Right.
You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
It does not at all.
I'll be very curious. I know there was a bunch of national groups that were doing webinars today.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other groups who were, because they had been kind of researching this. But once you read the opinion, you've got to see exactly what did the justices say.
Yeah.
There will be a lot more conversation coming out soon.
I've not gotten to the Thomas. So Thomas put out his own opinion that was joined by Gorsuch. And I've not... I've not read that one yet, but I bet it's the better of the two.
Yeah, you're ahead of me. I pulled it up and I saw the document was 92 pages long I said, okay, I'll read this later.
Right, fair.
And I'm sure there will be lots of conversation about it, I hope, in the next, you know, weeks, months.
I'm sure.
I think for listeners, if you've got this far in the episode and you are concerned about the future of our democracy, at least here in Oklahoma, if not nationally, to give someone some hope. We're about the work. We're about the action, right?
Amen.
As you said earlier.
Yes.
Let's talk about gerrymandering, what it is and how we prevent it. And I still wholeheartedly believe that the best solution we have is to take the power of redistricting out of the hands of politicians and put it in the hands of the people. You mentioned the populist origins of our state. Populist meaning like not, well, like kind of anti-government and not like in a, not like in a January 6th kind of way, but like just like that all power is inherent in the people.
Exactly.
And that we need some collective power and buy-in that government exists for and by the people.
Yeah.
And that when politicians are given the power to draw their own districts, they are going to draw them in ways that are unfair to everybody else.
Yes.
I mean, the other party and all the voters that they don't give two shits about.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And I mean, we can sit here and lament as to, you know, progressive podcasters, but we did the same shit. The Democratic Party in Oklahoma did same thing, right? Whenever they had power. And so it's a maneuver that, you know, gets used on both sides of the aisle, depending on who has, you know, the influence and the majority. But it shouldn't be. I totally agree with you. Right. I think that redistricting needs to be an external independent commission situation, if not, you know, at the very least an independent commission situation, if not to the people.
Agree. Listeners, if you'd like to learn more about this, if you're not already familiar, a couple of recommendations. First, go to your Google machine and look up the film Slay the Dragon. I know I've mentioned it on here before. We did a screening about it last fall. It is a documentary about the effort to end gerrymandering in Michigan by approving a voter-approved independent citizens commission.
Yeah.
Katie Fahey, who we've had on the show several years ago and is a good friend, was the one who led that charge. And much like me, she was not of politics. She worked in like recycling and then made a Facebook event. And that's it.
That's how it starts, man.
Yeah. I spoke to her last week. Actually, we are working on a project together. But there are people across the country, Michigan, in fact, Virginia. I'll just say it, like, one of my friends ran the campaign in Virginia to pass independent redistricting. It worked. They drew fair maps. Democrats came back and overturned them. Right? Just like in Colorado or California. This gerrymandering is not a partisan issue.
No, it's not.
It is a power issue.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right.
The party in power in whatever state wants to stay in power.
That's right.
And they mistakenly believe they will always be in power. They do everything they can to try to perpetuate that as much as they can.
Absolutely.
And this gerrymandering wars are a race to the bottom.
Yeah. They're not getting any better. Do you see this? I mean, this is the future. I mean, Florida, what DeSantis just, special session right now today, right?
Yeah.
To approve the map that he just drew up last night.
Right.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, and all this, but also the fact that they're trying to change maps just a few months out for an election for those seats. Where people have been campaigning, have been in the streets, been knocking doors, and they might get drawn out of their district for purely political purposes, for power purposes.
Yep.
I don't care which side of the aisle you're on. I think we've got to agree that gerrymandering is wrong.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of my liberal friends say, oh, it's bad, but we can't let them do it. And I also know that there are Republicans out there saying it's bad, but we can't let them do it with the other side.
Right.
Everyone, let's look in the mirror.
Period. Yeah.
And like, I know this is like, you and I are on the same soapbox screaming at people
like,
have a spine, do the right thing.
Please.
And it, in many cases, the right thing for the future of our democracy might mean that your party loses some power today.
Exactly.
But it also ensures the other side can't take that power down the road.
I don't understand why people see politics as this, you know, black or white situation. It is very much reciprocal, right? At any point in time, the precedent that you are setting can be used by your worst enemy, right? Or the, you know, your worst nightmare president or, you know, whomever it is, right? So we have to start thinking about politics as a longer term game. It's been gamified. It's been
the incentives.
It's just weaponized.
Yes, it has been weaponized, and we've changed the incentives to incentivize the wrong things.
Exactly.
The system, yeah. system is designed to incentivize yeah. this kind of behavior.
Yeah, and not good governance.
And not good governance.
And I mean, a lot of that is it's our fault, right? Because we're not voting.
Not you and I.
Not you and I as personally.
But voters.
Right. Us as a collective, right? Yeah. Because we're not turning out to vote. And so these people, these same human beings, are getting, you know, reelected to the U.S. House and U.S. Senate 96% and 100% of the time, yes. respectively. And yet we're still, you know, sitting down here shaking our fist at the sky. The approval rating of your Congress is, I think my kids checked the other day and it was 12% maybe, which is pretty high, actually. Yes. Surprisingly high. So, I mean, the problem is us. Like, we have to look in the mirror, like you said earlier.
Yeah.
If we want things to change, democracy is a hard thing. If you want an easy government, if you want, you know, somebody to tell you who your next president is before you actually get off your ass and vote,
right.
go live in an authoritarian government. Right. There are plenty of countries for you. But democracy is hard. It requires that you get off your ass and right. you go and vote and participate and sign petitions. And it's much, much more than just voting.
That's right.
But I would like for you to start there. You can at least start there.
Right. If you want to sit on your haunches, please. The president of North Korea gets elected by right? 99% yeah. majority exactly. every year, magically.
Uh-huh.
Well, this is a good segue. And I think this next section will probably be short,
sure.
both in the interest of time and because...
I'm sorry. We were very rambly today.
I don't want me to apologize for your passion. I not in this podcast. We think that everything, once, like, if we pass it with the vote of the people, mm-hmm. that means it, like, it's in the law or it's in the Constitution, that's going to be stuck.
Yeah.
And, like, it's there. And mm-hmm. that is not the case.
It is not the case.
It shouldn't be the case. These documents need to evolve over time.
Yeah.
But here on the state level, mm-hmm. we are seeing, and let's do a whole episode about this later.
Sure.
Legislative session is expected to be over in the next week or so. I heard today, May 7th. I've been hearing May 8th. So, like,
maybe.
I think they're just going to adjourn, not sign
yeah,
a guy.
I agree.
They'll give some time yeah. in case they need to come back for vetoes
so
or whatever.
Yeah.
So they'll probably adjourn in about a week.
Yeah.
And then, but what the legislature has done over the last 2-3 weeks is mm-hmm. refer a whole bunch of measures
yes.
to the ballot.
That is an understatement.
And they are, in almost every case, a constitutional amendment.
Mm-hmm.
And in multiple cases, they are constitutional amendments to overturn things that voters approved yep. not that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
Most notably, and I don't have all the numbers in front of me, which is why we're going to have to do it soon. But one is TSET, the Tobacco mm-hmm. Settlement Endowment mm-hmm. Trust. Which is currently in the Constitution.
It is.
The legislature wants to put it just in statute.
Right.
So they want to take it out of the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Other things like voter ID
yep.
are in the law.
Right.
And they want to put it in the Constitution.
Right.
And that one is a bit of a wash, but...
it really is. I was on the floor.
It doesn't need to be in the Constitution because it's already the law.
Right.
But it doesn't change anything.
It doesn't at all.
It just makes it harder to remove it, but most voters want it, so it's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm still going to vote no on it
because sure.
on principle. But
right.
And then the Judicial Nominating Commission,
yes,
which is in the Constitution.
Yep.
They want to change how it works mm-hmm. to like give themselves more mm-hmm. power. Then
Medicaid.
Oh yes, Medicaid expansion, which is in the Constitution, which we just voted. Approved.
Yeah.
6 years ago uh-huh. in 2020.
Pretty over. Was it not like 53? I want to say it was overwhelming maybe, yeah. for Oklahoma.
Yeah, right.
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, state questions are usually very close because they're often complicated and voters don't know.
Yeah, they just vote yes.
And their default right. position is vote no.
Yeah.
But the legislators who refused to pass Medicaid mm-hmm. expansion in the first place yep. now want to take it out of the Constitution and put it in statute. And they've said, we're not going to touch it. I'm like, yes, they are. We all know.
Yeah,
that.
Right. Why would you
not
going to
touch
this?
It? Then why
leave
would
it
you
alone? Know? Yeah,
exactly. They are. They have said their concern is, oh well, if the federal government mm-hmm. reduces how much money mm-hmm. they give us for Medicaid, then we need to be able to like basically cut the program.
Yeah,
which means kick people off.
Right.
Insurance. And I'm like, yes, but you could also raise revenue.
There you go.
So they're talking about why this is in the Constitution needs to be changed,
mm-hmm.
but ain't nobody talking about State Question 640
Mm-mm.
that requires this really high threshold
mm-hmm.
to raise revenue.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh no, but let's just change this one thing.
Yeah.
And I just can't, it's wild to me that politicians in election year are saying, give us control over this voter-approved piggy bank from TSET so we can redirect it. Give us control of Medicaid so we can cut people off of sooner care. Make it harder to vote. I'm like, these are all like anti-populist messages.
Very much so.
And I just can't, it's wild to me. So the other thing is that they are putting most of these
either on August or November.
Right.
Right. Right. Which is crazy.
Right. And that's the thing. Like most of these, not all, but most will go on the August ballot.
Yeah.
Which is a primary runoff. And normally it is, so you normally turnout is only like 10 to 15%. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Pretty low.
Right.
And by putting all of these on that ballot, it means that very few people will vote on them.
Yep.
And that means that it's easier for them to kind of run the game they want to run.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was shocked. So I happened to be up at the Capitol with my state and local kids the day that they were doing just consecutive HJRs. And you know my past. I've, you know, covered the legislature for a long time. I've never seen them pass so many JRs, so many constitutional amendments or constitutional questions in, I mean, I've never seen them do it. And so it was galling.
Yeah.
And again, as you mentioned, so many things that you know, that have been decided. And on that same point, Stitt signed the Public Infrastructure District legislation, which we actually voted down overwhelmingly, 61%. In fact, I do know that number, in 2024. And so that now is it's law now.
Right.
After voters very overwhelmingly said, why are we paying for developers? And why is this happening? So I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
I mean, the game is the game and sure, play it how you want. But I don't know that I think that stacking this many, and I know some conservative leaders are concerned about this. They've voiced more recently just the inundation, just how many questions are going to be on the ballot. I think that this is going to stack up against them.
It's also going to be a really tough electoral environment. And I think they are somewhat aware that the November ballot, the general ballot, might be more Democrat friendly.
Yes.
Or at least like anti-establishment friendly. I think that's probably a better characterization. And that means some of these measures would be harder to pass.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that voters' default position of no on a lot of these state questions, many of which are very complicated, doesn't help them.
At all.
But I also think that like, We need voters to know two big things. One, this is highly unusual. They have not sent this many state questions to the ballot, period. And almost never in August, not for like 40 years.
Oklahoma
Watch, Paul Money's looked into this and has a whole great article about it. Secondly, I know we've had a lot of conversation about close primaries and how it disenfranchises voters and that independents don't get to vote in June and August. But now we do.
Yeah.
Like this. So this is something listeners... If you take away nothing else from this week's episode, take this. Every voter in Oklahoma, regardless of party affiliation, has something to vote for in June, August, and November. If you're an independent, if you're a libertarian, if you are Green Party, whatever, however you identify politically, Republican, Democrat, all that stuff. Yeah. In June, it's minimum wage.
Right.
In August, it's like five or six things.
Yep.
And then November, it's obviously the general election for everything else, plus some state questions.
Right.
This is a very, very important election year.
Peak.
So tell your friends, every voter, including independents, has something to vote for in June and August and November. We're going to be doing a full court press on awareness about this. I have all these reminder cards that I printed about voting.
Sweet.
And I've got to print new ones because it only had the June and November dates on there. Because August wasn't a big one, but now it is.
Yeah,
absolutely. So I got to... If you would like to support Let's Fix This and help pay our printing costs, because now I got to reprint this stuff, it's letsfixthis.org/donate. We would greatly appreciate it. $10 a month goes a long way.
It does.
I think it costs, you know, I don't know, a few hundred bucks to print a couple thousand of these things. So, but we got to do more. It's not just reminder cards. We got to do phone calls and text messages and mail. And
we're going to have to do the whole thing, man.
Because the politicians are worried about themselves.
They are.
And making sure that the right voters in their mind to turn out. I want everybody to turn out.
Exactly. Right.
I know that everyone knows someone who doesn't vote regularly because they feel like their vote doesn't matter.
Yep.
It does. These questions will be very narrow.
They will be incredibly.
Like, I mean, it will come down to a few hundred or a few thousand votes. Oh, yeah. So, like, please remind people this is a big deal.
Yep.
Okay. I think we can get off our soapboxes today.
All right. I guess. I kind of like mine. It's comfortable.
It's a nice soapbox. Emily, thanks for being here today.
Always.
Listeners, thank you for being here as well. As we say every week, decisions are made by those who show up. June 16th, August 25th, November 3rd.
Yes.
Mark those on your calendar right now. And be sure you tell your friends. We'll print some signs so you can put a sign in your yard to remind people as well.
Mm-hmm.
These are big dates. This is a very important election year. Thank you for your time, for your treasure, for your attention, for your passion. Go get them. Have a great week.